This morning is one of those beautiful mornings where what we were reading in the Oversoul, and it shouldn't just be focused on nature, because we're not separate from nature. It's not like nature is out there. It is us, but there is that connection. We're aware. We're alive. We have that sense of things. And I didn't use it as a reading, but when we say, when our heart is in a holy place, 1008, we are blessed with love and amazing grace. And then it says, and we read these words, but think about them. When we trust the wisdom in each of us, not just in a few, that's what you need to remember. When we trust the wisdom in each of us, every color, every creed and kind, and we see our faces in each other's eyes, then our heart is in a holy place. Many of you know that my daughter, Hannah, is a sophomore at the University of Chapel Hill. She went there, she chose it, because she realized she could get a liberal arts education at a fine public institution. She made that choice to go there rather than a small college because she wanted to be a part of the diversity of that she sort of missed, that she wanted to participate in. She didn't want to just be with people that were more like her. She didn't quite accomplish that in all her ways, but she sees this diversity. She wanted to be with those students of all income levels that she'd been to school with. That was her point. And as a result of doing that, she turned down a scholarship to a fine, small liberal arts college, which Dad was going, "Are you sure you want to do this?" But she did. I couldn't be happier. Her life is being open to possibilities and creativity. It is a place of abundant revelatory moments. There are revelations in abundance. Ask questions, learn to think, become a future that has yet to be revealed. That's what she's participating in. She called me this week because this week was registering for classes, and she had gotten every class she wanted except for one she was waiting on, and that was poli-sci, political science, a 400-level course, and eventually she got in, but it's the title of it is Politics of Race in Contemporary American Culture. She was all excited about it. It says we're going to explore the role of ethnicities and identities in politics. She also, I told her, "Wow, I'm going to be doing this service on Sunday." And then she told me about going in to see her professor for the course that she's taking, which is called Hip Hop and Social Justice, where the professor is a woman from the Congo who went to Harvard and Berklee School of Music, and in the class, they are working with African artists who've even come over to develop hip hop tunes, songs, for social justice and to play back in Africa. Well, I can hear many of your brains going, "Oh yeah, and doing this, that, and the other." But it was really exciting to hear this. And she'd gone in to see this woman. Oh, and she said, "Dad, she has dreads down to the middle of her back." Going in to see this professor, she said, "I went in to see her to talk to her about privilege." She said, "I went in to talk to her about her privilege, because now she lives in America. She travels to the Congo in the summer because she can. And she's doing all these things, and she's a professor. She went to Harvard and the Berklee School of Music." And she said, "You do all these things, and here I sit, and I have white privilege, but," she says, "I can't do any of those things." And then she was concerned about how she could pursue her passions for working on questions of identity and how we can all have access to the benefits of the world. And yet she was concerned, how am I going to make a living? How am I going to have money? And this woman said, I don't have all the answers, but if you're dealing with this with your passion, trust it. She said, I don't have many people who come in here feeling passionate about this. Trust it. Know that the money will come. Just hold that image as you're sitting there. Her classes for this quarter, it's hip-hop and social justice. She took that because it's an audio-visual arts requirement. But her other classes are Hispanic literature, Latin American politics, American government, and there's one other that she just wrote a 17-page paper for. When I give those class descriptions, they're not in a major that I would have picked. Had I picked, I wanted her to do some other things that were more along the lines of what I had done, and I want her to have more ecology, more connection to the earth. But she had very bad biology classes, and she's not going to go near that again. Those things happen. So how happy it makes me, and that I am for her. I also hear the voices. I can feel them coming back at me. I hear them in coffee hour. I've heard it in coffee hour. Somebody said right next to me, said, I've never known a person who went into the helping professions who didn't regret it when it came time to retire. So that's a voice of, don't do that, because that won't work. There's the New Yorker cartoon that is in this week's New Yorker, which shows two heavies, you know, two tough guys rolling up their sleeves. And there's a guy backed up against the wall, and he's a young guy in shorts, and he's obviously college age. And it's called, the caption under it says, student loan sharks. And one of them saying to the young man, the little boy is saying, as he rolls up his shirt, he says, you should have thought of that when you decided to be a philosophy major. He'd come to collect. We even do the same thing. We have those thoughts when we say, what is your major? What are you going to be? Where are you going with that degree? What are you going to make with it? So what I'm going to say is not like it's absolutely different from what's going on in our own heads. But before we go on, let's get oriented. Let's see where this sense in me, how happy it makes me, how I approach this way, where it comes from, why this feels so right to be engaged in a liberal arts education. Or you can do that, or an engagement with others for their wisdom, their connection, those revelations that may come in the participation of ways to be in the world that may be different. Why this feels so right for me, for her, for the world. It's because it's a part of my faith. It's how I organize the world. When I talk about the chalice and using it as a compass, and I say that the outer rings are our traditions, one is the universalist understanding of one human family, one nature, one origin, one sort of destiny, but it's inclusive, an inclusive universe. If it's God, it's a loving God. It's not just a God of the special. It's not just a God of the right or of the few. We talked about mysteries. Life is a gift which we are grateful for, which we are grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift. So within that is a trust of participation with all that is in all being. The other sense is Unitarian, which has an exalted view of human possibility. Register that, sit with that. And then it says we have religious exemplars. We have teachers who come up with ways of living well. And then you turn around with the transcendentalists who say we can be in touch with those understandings. We can engage our imagination in ways that help create them. Revelation is not sealed. It's to be discovered, found out, created, literally, as we go forward. Being in touch with and engaged with the world, the environment we live in, learning from it, then things will be revealed to us by living, by being connected to all there is, living beyond the book as fixed one way. Even if the book is your economic reality, how do you live beyond that? There is not a fixed one way in the alive realities outside the box of the book. And what we say is making that vision and nature of the inclusive universe real in our lives and in our world is how we're supposed to be. So when we light the flame, it's not just about action, but it's about enlightened ways of being. Revelation, new organizing insights and understandings. When you say Revelation is not sealed, it's not just a three-word, four-word phrase. Ways to know the holy and the good are not sealed in the Bible. The church, the priest, the minister, they're available to everyone. And they come through everyone. How do they do that? By challenging yourself and exploring ways to live fully. Not necessarily live successfully. I'm not arguing against that. But that's not the only way to see. Live fully. Engage the imagination with confidence and hope. It's not just for the special. We are all creative. It's not just revelations for the few from the past coming forward. It's not just the revelations of the privileged. Revelation is unsealed. It's available to everyone. How to be in the world, how you are supposed to be in the world, is available to you. It was the transcendentalists of the mid-19th century who made this point so clearly and opened our eyes. Emerson, Thoreau, Bronson Alcott actually developed schools based on this idea. This month is the first time I understood or understand the whole general importance, actually the radical voice of saying that Revelation is not sealed. How many of you read Emerson, Thoreau, some of them in high school? Do you remember doing that? Right. And then you didn't get it till you read it later, you know. It was kind of like, okay. Another book that I had we were supposed to read was Moby Dick, you know. People are raising their hand. Well, then I read that as a part of a class in Divinity School, Theological Themes in American Religion and Culture. And then it became this very powerful, wonderful book. Melville was a Unitarian, so, and was reflecting on the nature of being. He was a transcendentalist as well. So let's just not spend a lot of time there and move forward through the 20th century development of public education in America. You think that's where American public education really came into being, and also our public universities. But they went with that notion from John Dewey, being one of the major reformers, of the idea that education should be participatory, it should be very democratic, it should engage the people who are involved as you are, of course, working to promote your culture and your community. But he argued against Revelation being sealed in the great books, in the canon. You come forward to our reading, which said what? It said that occasions of revelatory insight are the motivating purpose of all truly liberal education. The formation of young adult faith is nourished by abundant revelatory moments, those opportunities in abundance, revelations in abundance, not just of a limited God, not just limited to insights in the Bible or even just the great books, but of human experience and life. Now just come forward and focus in a few more years to our state, our governor, Pat McCrory, and Art Pope, his budget advisor, and then focus in on millions of dollars. The governor said he is not going to fund something that is not going to get someone a job. He went on to say, I'm not going to subsidize gender studies or Swahili with public money. If we're talking about revelation and seeing differently, I can tell you that it was the gender studies in divinity school that opened my eyes to a whole different way of viewing the world. It challenged me. It wasn't easy. It was painful because I was standing up there as a straight white male, and I had classes where the professor wouldn't even acknowledge me raising my hand. Oh, somebody goes, oh, I love that. That's how it felt. Well, this is a part of the problem right now is because, well, anyway, that's going off. But I'm not in the conversation in North Carolina anymore. I can't raise my hand and be acknowledged. I don't have a representative who can do my job and be heard. So that welcome, it's sort of like, hey, Jim, welcome to the world of these folks. What Pat McCrory is saying follows straight from Art Pope. And there's an article, they're saying that revelation is and should be sealed. Right? If it's not about business, if it's not about money, we're not going to open that book. That's what they're saying. And Art Pope has given, there's an article, of course you'll go, yeah, it's in the New Yorker, but he funds the Pope Center of for Higher Education. Quote, their goal is to encourage respect for the institutions that underlie economic prosperity, including private property, competition, and limits on government. This center sketches a two-pronged attack on public higher education as currently practiced. It has to be regarded as an economic good like any other, and that low tuition rates subsidize it and distort the market. So if you increase the financial burden on students in the UNC system, it would likely cause them to cluster in safe pre-professional majors, go to other schools. And this would be just fine, according to higher education's market reformers, because those are the programs that provide return on investment. You're back to the question of, what is your major? What good is it going to do you? Where are you going to go with it? The other front is a call to revive the great books model of humanities education. Revelation is sealed. The report devotes a great deal of attention to programs dedicated to the morality of capitalism. They fund, as they close centers, they've funded centers around the country. In the last 15 years, they've actually funded over 62 centers at public and private colleges and universities, and it's funded by North Carolina-based BB&T Bank, under its former president, John Allison. He's now the CEO of the Cato Institute, and he says he funded the programs to retake the universities from statist collectivist ideas. He also noted that training students in the morality of capitalism is clearly in our shareholders' long-term best interests. When the head of the Pope Center went to speak to a group of major donors, he said, you've been giving money to politicians for years and years. What good has it done, done you. And he says, it hasn't worked out very well, as they all laughed about that. And he says, you shouldn't be giving your money so much to politicians as you should be to changing the intellectual culture of this nation. If we're only giving 0.1% to trying to change the intellectual culture of this nation, you are by definition going to lose. Well, they've changed that strategy, and they're spending millions of dollars to change the intellectual culture of this nation. Revelation should be sealed to a canon that is approved by the approving body. Make no mistake, they understand that to have that body that does approve is important. Just this last January, so just a few months ago, the president of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Tom Ross, was fired. Nobody could say why he was fired. They said what a great job he'd done, but he was fired. He had been chairman of the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, which is a very progressive foundation here in North Carolina. But what had happened was the Board of Governors had been changed. Then they also closed down these three centers on the North Carolina campus: Center for the Environment, for Voter Engagement, and the Center on Poverty, Work, and Opportunity. Oh, that other class I didn't tell you that Hannah's taking is Environmental Law and Policy. So they cut centers that affect every one of my daughter's classes, for example, or overlap them. A public institution. Usually closing these centers, even though the Board of Governors has the power to do it, is the decisions are left to the schools. But that's been changed. The Board of Governors has been changed. Hannah said that the students went to the meetings with tape over their mouths because they'd been silenced and they were forced to leave the meetings. But then she said, and I did, she said, she said, Dad, they're all old white men. She added some other adjectives, but I... I said, hey, I'm an old white guy. They're all old white men telling us what we should learn. Think about it. So why am I so mad and scared? Threatens my daughter's life. Not really, because she's going to get her education and move on. And she, you can see she's challenging it, enjoying it, being a part of it, being challenged by it. But it threatens children to come. It threatens my basic notion of freedom. Free to live fully. Not free to do your work because you tell me how I have to work to be in the world. Freedom. Challenges my religious orientation. I told you that. That's how I move freely in the world. That's how I get excited about being in the day. And it's white men again. White men and money. And that makes me mad. Because I'm helpless. I'm not arguing against that, or money bad, or business bad, or any of that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying both and. But the real problem is I feel helpless and powerless. I don't have the currency. They've got so much money. They've got the logic of the economy, that strong argument that tops everything else in the room. And they get so much support. It also goes against my notion of trust and my view of hope. My hope is in the idea of revelations in abundance. When we talk about a hidden wholeness, they see sinful brokenness. When we say, be who you truly are, Art Pope says, only if that's acceptable to us. And yet, we both care, he and I. We're both concerned about the future, but with different ways to approach the unknown. When you are mad, angry, scared about these kinds of things and say, can you believe this? Believe it. They've got the money. They've got the power. And they've got the smarts. And they got the cell phones. And they control the government in North Carolina. But the threat is not just from a them. They are us. It's also because of me. I have taken public liberal arts education for granted. I have taken it as a given. I have become complacent. They see it as a commodity and training in training to their vision of world order. John Dewey, the reformer of American education, died in 1952. That was the year I was born. His view was open, participatory, democratic. Revelation is unsealed. Thoreau and Emerson in high school. I grew up with this idea of American freedom, living well, and an education being a part of that. My divinity school experience was really liberal arts classes and revelations. So having these choices is not just granted, given, ongoing. It's not part of the world order of things. It has to be protected, valued, cared about. We have to care so that everyone can be participating in creating, imagining new inclusive visions of the world that is yet to be. The third part of the chalice that I didn't talk about is the space in here, the beloved community. And we talk about that we are a radically incarnational faith. That means we embody our actions. We have to put our practice into practice. God doesn't just give us these things. Well, the notion of not given also applies to this. I've been treating liberal arts education as a given, as something that just is and has been given to me. But I have to do something about it. Engage. The third line of our mission statement, engage in practice and service for love, justice, and peace. So what am I going to do? I don't know. I'm going to start caring. That's what I've connected with now, how important this is to me. And then I'm going to try to become a voice and participate in the conversation. And the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to turn to the Moral Monday marches, because they give me a handhold, a starting place. For all these issues I care about, for justice issues, the real way to change it, and that's what Art Pope is saying, is to work with the education so that you begin to see other visions and ways of being in the world. We have to care enough to persist so everyone can question and think and create and help form the world that is yet to be. We need to have revelatory moments in abundance. When I was talking about this, Judy Long and I met for breakfast this last week to go over business, and she said, hey, we're getting a bus to go to the Moral Monday March, that the second annual one that's on April 29th, we're going to do a whole bus, social justice outreach team. Well, here's the other part. The Moral Monday met on Monday so you could meet with the legislature. The legislature was in session. So what did they do? They changed it to Wednesday. So it's harder for people to get there and be there on a Monday. So Moral Monday marches on Wednesday this year. And Judy Long is here to tell us some of the details and encourage us to get on the bus. Oh, that's a good one. Get on the bus to go to school, you know?
This bus. Woo. Thank you, Goody. So last night I was telling Kevin, my 9-year-old, that we were getting this bus, and the first thing, she interrupted her gadgetry and looked at me and she said, Mama, Can I go to Raleigh and tell him what I think, too? So Jim's right. On Wednesday, April 29th, we are going to Raleigh. I hope you will all join us. The Social Justice Outreach Team has committed to getting a 55-passenger bus to meet somewhere in Hendersonville, location exactly TBA. It'll be $45 a ticket, and there are some limited funds for some scholarships if that's beyond what people can do. We are reaching out to our other congregations and like-minded organizations to go with us so we can fill up this bus. We encourage you to sign up because there are more than 55 of you here, and if we reach out to other congregations, we're going to fill it fast, so please. It is, as Jim mentioned, a Wednesday and not a Monday, and that was intentional to discourage us. We are not going to be discouraged. We're going to get louder. Pardon?
Oh, they've
scheduled. No, it's on when they've set it on Wednesdays. The evening schedule is now for Wednesdays instead of Mondays, and so that's why. How are we doing this? We made a change back last summer that the Social Justice Outreach Team, we were going to hold back about 10% of all of our outreach collections to enable our team to do more activities, to do more, to be more present, to be more flexible and mobile. And this is one of the first ways we're doing this. We're going to get some T-shirts, so we'll be visible. And no, they won't be the gold ones, though we love to stand on the side of love. We're going to go for a prettier color than that. We're going to be present as the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville to raise our hand and have our voices heard. Please come with us. All ages. My 9-year-old is so excited. The 29th, we'll have a sign-up sheet downstairs. We're going to be selling seats on the bus, reserving seats on the bus this week, next week. Carol Rapici and I will be your two lead people in this congregation, but if you have any questions, you can send them to the office, and I'm sure that Sandy will direct you to us if you can't get to us. But please, come help us make our voices heard on education, on healthcare, on voter rights, on the environment, on all of the different pieces. Because though Hannah is going to get her education and be off in the world because she's close to there, mine's not guaranteed yet.
So I heard somebody when they said $45 go, oh, well, that's round trip, and don't let that stop you. If you want to go, we'll find the money to make it where you can go to. So let's just do that. The whole synchronicity of this timing is great. Let's make it good. We can get two buses, you know? Let's fill them up. Let's just go. And you go, well, what difference does it make? It's the way to be a part of the conversation. It's a way to care. It's a way to persist. And it's the only way I know right now to begin to do it. So I'm going to do it and make it happen. I changed my schedule to make it work. You can change yours too. So